now, your hosts for Life from the Pulpit. Here's Nick Perez.
Yes, and how's it? And welcome to Life from the Pulpit, the cutting edge in biblical exposition, coming to you on location in Merced, California, home of the Merced Church of Christ. This is the fastest half-hour podcast in the West, or your money back guaranteed, where I, your humble correspondent, the voice of the valley, Nick Perez, offer up news and views you can use on Scripture and society with a little help from my friends. Greetings, and welcome to the program. Okay, I have the very difficult task today of breaking down, in a short amount of time, the 13th chapter of the book of Revelation. But I will do my best, and hopefully we can get through this. A couple of beasts, two beasts present themselves in chapter 13. Let's go ahead and read verse 1 here. I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads and with 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous names on its head. Notice this thing is coming out of the sea. The sea in the book of Revelation has to do with nations. Okay, that's nations that we're talking about here. Whenever you see sea, you're supposed to think nations. Now, I've said this repeatedly throughout this study. Let me give you the proof. Revelation 17, verse 15, the angel said to me, "The waters that you saw where the prostitute is seated are peoples and multitudes and nations and languages." Whenever you see seas or waters in the book of Revelation, you're supposed to think nations, peoples, languages, stuff like that, okay? So this beast is coming out of the sea. It's where it has its origin. It's interesting. Some here believe that there may be an allusion to the historical fact that Rome came to Asia from the sea, came by boat, something like that. And so that's how this beast parallels. It could ultimately have to do with the instability and the unpredictability of the sea. Maybe that's the best idea. But at any rate, here's this beast, 7 heads, 10 horns. If we assume that this beast here in Revelation 13 is the same beast over in chapter 17, that beast in 17 also has 7 heads and 10 horns, then the meaning of the 10 horns is found there in chapter 17. And I'm going to save the explanation for that for that time. Okay, I'll deal with it in chapter 17. I may touch it a little bit today. We'll see. But at any rate, notice it's got blasphemous names. These are titles taken by emperors that equate them with the gods. We're talking stuff like Sebastos. That was that's a word for divine in the original language. Augustus, he took the title of Divos, and that meant to be like one of the gods. Nero declared himself the savior of the world. Talk about presumptive. Domitian, of course, I've mentioned. He went by the title Kurios Kai Theos, Lord and God. He delighted to hear people call him Lord. In fact, he began a circular letter identifying himself, quote, Master and God, Lord and God, Kurios Kai Theos. So we're talking about some guys that, those are the blasphemous names, those are the titles claiming themselves to be deity. There is also something, you remember back in our study, Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, there was one who would change the times and the law. That was the fourth beast, the fourth kingdom, that's Rome. Guess what some of these guys did? Yep, you guessed it, they changed the names of some of the months. Some of them did demand emperor worship. Domitian, though, he was the worst. And so we have these blasphemous names, that's the idea. Okay, let's check this out, verse 2. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Its feet were like a bear's, and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. So we have what? We have leopard, bear, lion's mouth. Okay, leopard, bear, and lion. And now, you know, you connect this back to your Old Testament, back to Daniel chapter 7, that there was something there about the prototype animal. That was that fourth kingdom that came out, and we get a little light shed there on Daniel 7. That's the origin. This is the fulfillment of Daniel chapter 7, or maybe more prophecy concerning what was seen in Daniel chapter 7. Just a great, terrifying beast Just this personification of the Emperor Empire Rome. So the Barclay says that Rome, the Roman Empire, was so satanic that it included all the nastiness of the previous kingdoms combined. And so that's why you get this conglomeration of all these animals. You remember back in Daniel 7, there was the lion, that was Babylon. You had the bear, Medo-Persian. You had the leopard, that was Greece. And then you had that very powerful beast, that very terrifying beast that came after that. It seems as though all of the power and all the ferocity and even some of the nasty characteristics, the sinful characteristics, got factored in here into the Roman Empire, all combined into the Roman Empire. 10 hordes, only 7 heads, though. 7 heads could convey the idea of that which is perfect, that which is complete or total. But then those 7 horns, again, yeah, I'll go ahead and touch it right now. Chapter 17, verses 7 through, I don't know, 10. Angel said to me, "Why do you marvel? I'll tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast with 7 heads and 10 horns that carry her. The beast you saw was and is not and is about to rise from the bottomless pit and go to destruction. And the dwellers of on the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will marvel to see the beast, because it was and is not and is to come. This calls for a mind with wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman is seated." Rome, by the way, was built on 7 hills. They are also 7 kings, 5 of whom have fallen. One is yet to come. And when he does come, he must remain only a little while. As for the beast that was and is not, it is an 8th, but it belongs to the 7, and it goes to destruction. So it just keeps the 10 horns that you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received royal power, but they are to receive authority as kings for 1 hour together with the beast. Let's see here. 5 who have fallen. This is back in verse 10 of 17. 5 who have fallen. That's Augustus, Caligula, Nero, Tiberius, Claudius. 1 who is, I believe that's Vespasian. And the other was not yet. That's Titus. When he does come, he must remain a little while. Titus only reigned for 2 years. And then the beast that was and is not, it is an 8th. That's Domitian. Now, you did have 3 others that were uprooted. Because you have 10 kings here. 3 were uprooted. That's Galbo, Otho, Vitellus. Again, I'll spend more time on that. It is rather confusing. But ultimately, I bring all that up to say that this beast, to whom the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority, this beast is Domitian. This is, I should say, maybe this is Rome under the leadership of Domitian. Maybe that's a better way of presenting it. I'm talking about a kingdom here. But at any rate, people are going to worship the emperor. This won't be empire worship, but emperor worship, as we'll see here as we work through this. But it says here, verse 3, "One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast." Something about this wounded head here. One was wounded. It's a fatal blow. Usually would have killed, but it's healed, right? The wound was healed. The whole earth marveled. So which king was wounded? Now, again, it's difficult to work through all these elements of the vision because, again, not all of the vision is reality. Not all the reality is in the vision. But there is something about Nero. First of all, there were some who thought maybe Caligula, he was sick and recovered at one time. But Nero, something about Nero. Suetonius writes about a theory about Nero. He was so evil, he couldn't be killed. In fact, the Parthians, they accepted some dude who came to them and claimed to be Nero. He was Nero Redivivus. He was Nero resurrected. The thought that Nero wasn't killed, assassinated. He just escaped to the Parthians, and he would one day return. That was the theory. Suetonius mentions that one who faked to be Nero, claimed to be Nero, but doesn't seem to be the case. Rather, this seems to be the rebirth of Nero in the form of Domitian. Tertullian referred to Domitian as a limb of bloody Nero. A lot of people connected Nero with Domitian. And so the basic theory is that the vision is some, again, in very highly figurative language, the head that was as Nero then was not going to be during the time of the writing. There's one that is, but he's coming back in the form of Domitian. He is one like Nero. That's the idea. So the head was mortally wounded. It would come back. Was, is not, and will come. Nero is fatally wounded. He is not right now, but he is coming back. Not literally, but as in the form of Domitian. They're very much alike. Both Nero and Domitian, they were emperors. They were both crazy out of their mind. They were both persecutors of the church. And so the character of Nero, he's coming back as this eighth head. Okay? Coming out of the sea, connect that with Revelation 17, verse 15, Psalm 65, verse 7, Isaiah 17, verse 12, also for some more on that, by the way. Verse 4, and they worship the dragon, that's Satan, for he had given his authority to the beast, and they worship the beast. So through the beast, these... through the beast, these are the people of earth are worshiping Satan. That's the idea. Now, it's interesting. You have a similar concept here over in the book of Revelation, still in Revelation, but this time in chapter 18 and verse 2, where she's become a dwelling place for demons. That's idols. That's Babylon the Great, by the way. And then there's one verse over in Psalm 106. Get this. This is interesting. Psalm 106, verse 37, where you have this connection being made between idols and demons. They sacrifice their sons and their daughters to demons. What is that? Verse 36, they serve their idols, which became a snare to them. Idolatry is ultimately, at heart, demon worship. And so, when these people worship Domitian, they're really worshiping Satan himself because he's given his authority. That's the idea here. They said, who is like the beast? Who can fight against it? He's just so big, so mighty, so powerful. They are so amazed at him, and they followed the beast. Let's see, what else here? What else? Again, to worship Rome's deities is to worship the emperor himself. That's worship of Satan. It's a rejection of deity altogether. Worship Satan himself. All right, so much here, and I got to press on here because there's so much more to get to. What happens here? Verse 5, the beast was given a mouth uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was carried to exercise, it was allowed, excuse me, to exercise authority for 42 months. Huh, we've seen that before, haven't we? In chapter 12, also in chapter 11, all this stuff about 42 or 1260 days or 3.5 years. Okay, so this is more of the persecution. Satan is allowed to persecute. The gospel will be preached, chapter 10. More about that over in verses 8 through 14. The church, though, is protected, sealed. The woman, she's protected as well. It's all church language. So you get this limited period of time of trouble. Those under the altar, again, you remember they're crying out, how long, how long? But Domitian's persecution, there will be an end of it. It'll come at his death, but he's going to persecute the church until his death. And then guess what? The persecution is going to stop. Okay, so that's the idea there of the 42 months. It's limited. Verse 6, it opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling place. Listen, when you take titles that belong exclusively to God, like Kurios Kai Theos, yeah, that's blasphemous. Blaspheme his name, blaspheme his dwelling. His dwelling, by the way, is the church. That is those who dwell in heaven. They're sealed, okay, sealed by the Spirit of God. Yeah, he's got this power. Verse 7. Also, it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. By the way, if the church, Mr. Tim LaHaye, has been raptured, how's he making war on them? Why can the beast make war on the church, the saints, if they've been raptured? Well, anyway, and authority was given it over every tribe and people and language and nation. Power over the language of them that have been washed in the blood. Chapter 5, verse 9. The question is, will the people who've been washed in the blood, will they give up their life and their confidence in God, or are they going to continue to be faithful? That's the question. They're marked. They're kept safe. Those who dwell on the earth, they're going to worship the beast, but are God's people going to remain faithful? That's the bottom line. He's got all this authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation. And all who dwell on the earth who worship in it, everyone whose name was not written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. Who's that? That's Jesus, okay? Jesus was the Lamb who was slain. It's his book. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. Listen up. If anyone has been taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain by the sword, with a sword must he be slain. Here is a call for endurance and faith of the saints. So, again, a call to endure. He's got this authority for 42 months, allowed authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation. Again, make that connection with 5 verse 9, same kind of language is used there. He's got power over them, and he's going to exercise that authority to persecute them for the time. But, again, they're sealed, they're protected, and they're protected from the sea beast. Oh, man, what else? Saints, they must patiently endure. Same thing's true today. You know, we may not be called to worship, you know, our leaders in the political realm, not yet at least, but we must always be vigilant, to be patient, and to endure whatever things might come against us. This is a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. Be faithful in endurance. By the way, to be slain with the sword, you know how Domitian was killed? By the sword. He was stabbed in the groin by a guy named Stephanos. So it's coming to an end. Just be faithful. And this knowledge should bolster the faithful. Okay, one more beast here. Verse 11, then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. Let me just say this. It's rising out of the earth. That seems to indicate that it is of human origin, not of divine origin. Looks like a lamb, but it's really a beast. Spoke like a dragon. It exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose mortal wound was healed. Okay, so the worship, this second beast is focusing the worship on one head, on Domitian. Okay, it's focusing its worship on Domitian. Again, not empire worship, but emperor worship. So it looks like a lamb, but it's really a false prophet. And this false prophet, we'll see, is able to perform signs. He disguises himself. Some say this could have been the Roman priesthood. And they would call the people to bow down to Domitian. You could go and you could worship Domitian, courtesy of the temples by the Roman priesthood. But again, it's emperor worship, not empire worship. Verse 13, it performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven to earth in front of people. And by the signs that it is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on earth, telling them to make an image or an icon for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. This is idolatry. Okay, more idolatry. And by the way, these signs that would deceive those dwelling on the earth, again, not God's people, those dwelling in heaven, that's language for the saints. This is language for those who are outside of the kingdom, the rule and reign of God. And these signs are deceptive. They deceive them. 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 9 and 10 talks about more of those counterfeit signs. That's the thing about this. The beast, Satan's a copycat. When it comes to miracles, he's a copycat. The apostles, they did real miracles. Confirmed the word that was spoken. Satan, though, they're not true miracles. They're false miracles. They're counterfeit miracles. And there'll be a threat if people don't worship. You know, you'll be killed and that sort of stuff. But we'll see that more in just a moment. Commentators say, though, that the Roman priests, they were professional con men. Kind of like the magicians back in Egypt. Maybe you can make a connection back to Exodus chapter 8. I believe it's verses 8 through 10, where you could see about how Jannes and Jambres, these are the magicians of Egypt. They were able to do the miracles up to a point, okay? And then there came a point where they said, look, this is of God. We can't do this. This is God's, the finger of God at work here. The magicians of Egypt and even these guys, they're good, but they're not that good, okay? They're great illusions, but they're just that. They're just illusions, counterfeit miracles. It was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast. Verse 15, it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the beast to be slain. So there you go. There you go. They're killing people. Threat of death if you don't worship the emperor. Also, it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one could buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is, the mark of the beast or the number of its name. Now, this is where the plot thickens, isn't it? Because I'm sure you've heard all kinds of stuff about the mark of the beast. I want you to contrast this mark on the right hand and on the forehead with, look at chapter 14 and verse 11. The smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night, these worshippers of the beast. So this is the fate of those worshippers and its image, and whoever receives the mark of its name. So you see that, the mark, and that's their destiny. Now contrast this mark on the right hand and on the forehead with the seal of God. We already saw this earlier. Chapter 7, verse 3. Do not harm the earth, the sea, the trees, until we have sealed the servants of God on their foreheads. Make a connection also there to 2 Timothy 2:19. You can look that up in your own time. Stay in Revelation, though, chapter 9 and verse 4. They were told not to harm the grass, the earth, or any green plant or any tree, but only those who did not have the seal of God on their foreheads. This is a contrast here, okay? Highly figurative, apocalyptic-type language, prophetic language, does not necessarily have a literal fulfillment where we're going to have barcodes across our foreheads or on our right hands. Tim LaHaye, Hal Lindsey, and all those others notwithstanding. You know, you won't be able to buy without a barcode or anything like that. Not even www. Right? And anyway. So, this has to do with when you went to worship the beast and you made your sacrifice. The priest would give you a mark of the ashes. He'd dip his finger in the ashes and put it on your forehead. Uh-oh, Ash Wednesday? Put the ashes on your forehead or on your right hand. So I have heard, so I have been told. And then these first century Christians, since they didn't go and offer this worship to the beast, they didn't have the mark of worship. They didn't worship the emperor, and so they couldn't buy or sell. They had to go to the black market and spend exorbitant amounts of money just to get enough food to feed themselves, not to mention their family. So all this talk about this mark being some barcode that we're all going to get on our foreheads or anything like that, that's junk biblical scholarship. It's script torture in the grossest way, and you don't need to listen to that kind of stuff. That's not what this is. This has to have application for the original audience, the seven churches in Asia, and that's exactly what this is. Everyone in the Roman Empire had to either go worship the emperor and get the ashes, or if they didn't, you couldn't buy. Economic sanctions were placed on those who didn't have the mark of the beast. Others point to the coinage. The coinage had the image of the emperor, but I like the idea of the emperor. You had to actually go worship before you could buy stuff in the market. Okay, I'm going to deal with 666 for the question of the day, but first, this half hour brought to you by Christian Book Distributors. You know, as a preacher, I need good tools for Bible study. And I go to Christian Book Distributors to get all my Christian books and Bibles at bargain prices, with a large selection of Christian fiction, kids' books, Christian music, DVDs, books, both classics and contemporary, and of course Bibles. CBD is sure to have exactly what you need. Go online and visit www.christianbook.com or call 1-800-CHRISTIAN. That's 1-800-247-4784. Christian Book Distributors, serving the Christian community for over 30 years.
And now it's time for the question of the day. Question of the day. Question. This is the question of the day on Life from the Pulpit.
Can you please explain the mark of the beast and 666? I dealt with the mark of the beast. Let's deal with 666. Verse 18 of Revelation 13. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. Now, just about everybody, it seems, has been the beast, okay? Has been marked as the 666 beast, okay? Just about everybody. Let me just give you a short list here to prove my point. Some have variously identified this as Julian the Apostate, Muhammad, some personage that was supposed to arise in the 1836. I'm not sure how they got that. Other modern identifications: Pope Benedict the Ninth, Pope Leo the Tenth, Martin Luther, Napoleon, Adolf Hitler, Benito Mussolini, John F. Kennedy, Henry Kissinger, Ronald Reagan, especially that one, Ronald Wilson Reagan, 666, letters of his name, Mikhail Gorbachev, Bill Gates, Barney. If we're going by letters of a name, how about Barack Hussein Obama? Let's see, what is it? 6, 7, 5, 18, 666. Uh-oh! But none of these explanations are any kind of plausible whatsoever, because they violate a very basic rule that these things must soon take place. We've seen that. The book of Revelation is bookended by those statements. And this had to mean something to the first century Christians. It had to be something they could understand. So what is it? Well, first of all, some other explanations that maybe aren't as likely either. This 666 is a triangular number of 36. That is, you add 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus all the way to 36, you get 666. 36 is a triangular number to 8. 1 plus 2 plus 3 all the way to 8. So eight-headed beast, there you go. But that's really highly unlikely. A lot of math there. I think this is very, again, it's highly figurative symbolic language. This is symbolism. Six stated three times. That is six, the number of incompleteness, which is pretending to be complete. Three, the number of completeness, incompletion, masquerading as completeness. That's very good as well. But here's the thing: numbers like this, gematria, I believe that's how you pronounce that. That was a very popular thing. In fact, they have found in a wall in Pompeii a poem, Amerimnus thought upon his lady Harmonia for good. The number of her honorable name is 45. I love her whose name is 545. So you already have this stuff. You already have these numbers back in the day. You could calculate it. But that's the thing. He's a man. You can calculate. He's not God. That's the bottom line. And in fact, when you crunch the numbers, from what I've understand, the name that best fits this is Domitian. Okay, Domitian. His name fits best. When you do the math and that sort of thing. And again, these first century readers, they would have understood that. They would have understood that he is the guy that's being spoken of here. Okay? And so Satan, he's going to invest his power into the Roman Empire. That's the idea. He's going to put all his eggs into one basket. Pressure's on. Some are going to die. But remember, this guy's only a man. Domitian is just a man. He's finite. In fact, he's going to die eventually. And when he dies, the persecution will end. That's it. Men come, men go, but God remains. And so this number was used to identify Domitian. He's the guy, and that's all. He's just a guy. So that's a bit about 666. I'm out of time. Feel free to leave a comment on the website. I would like to hear what you have to say. Search Facebook for the Life from the Pulpit Facebook page. Like us on Facebook. Get all the updates when I go live with the podcast. Update the blog. Also search YouTube, Life from the Pulpit, for the YouTube channel. Got good question of the day material there for you to share with your friends. Follow me on Twitter at InPulpit, at the letter N as in Nick, Pulpit, P-U-L-P-I-T. Stop by the Life from the Pulpit blog, www.lifefromthepulpit.wordpress.com. All my commentaries there on Luke, James, 1 John, all there, all available, all free for you to use and peruse in your everyday Bible study. Now on iTunes, search the iTunes store for the Life from the Pulpit podcast and download all the episodes to your particular iDevice. You'll never be more than a click away from an episode of the program. Also, check out Merced Church of Christ website, mercedchurchofchrist.org, mercedchurchofchrist.org, for plenty of sermon audio just updated yesterday. And as always, brethren, grace be with you all. Thanks for listening.